Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
I do too.
Sing it.
Good morning.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you?
In the palm of your hand,
use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
I got you.
Sing it.
Welcome, welcome to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, you know the slogan for our show is, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, captures that power for your financial benefit. And the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, is a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize Black-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and conditions and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the unemployment and underemployment of young African-American men locally and nationally, also to educate the Black community locally and nationally about the effects of and impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black community talk pro radio programs such as Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America is also brought to you by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. It's also brought to you every week by the Scotton Communications Network, specializing in the following areas: public relations, writing, editing, web development, web editing, magazine production, online and traditional, newspaper production, online and traditional, speech writing, book writing, editing and publishing, and speaker bureau management. And for contact information, you can contact ScottonCommunicationsNetwork.com. Once again, you can contact ScottonCommunicationsNetwork.com. Well, we have a very, very exciting edition for you today. And those who join us on a regular basis, you know that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. And please remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. Now, we are very, very privileged to have guests in our first top of our hour, and I want to bring our guests right on into our studio. We have Mr. Frank Coles, who has, I've captioned the title of the show, "The Solar for All Program is Like Hitting the D.C. Lottery," and we have a person who can attest to that. We also are blessed to have Mrs. Yesenia Riviera, who's the program director for Neighborhoods United DC. So without further ado, I want to bring our guests right on into our airways. Good morning, guests.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ron.
Well, I'm going to jump, as they said, I'm going to jump right on into the show this morning, and One of the things that I want to do in the first part of the show is sort of share with our listening audience some information about the Solar for All program and the process. So I'm going to ask Mrs. Riviera to lead off this morning, Frank, because you have been one of those lottery hitters. I said one of those lottery winners by applying to the Solar for All program and being able to work with Solar Neighborhoods United and successfully completing the process. And you are now the proud homeowner that has I think 5 kW, which will be kilowatt system on your home, which has the value of almost about $30,000 with not 1 cent out of your pocket. And I think that's exciting news here in Washington, D.C. So without further ado, I want to bring Mrs. Riviera on. Well, good morning, Mrs. Riviera, Yasmin. Yasina, I always chop your name up, Yasina. Would you please introduce yourself to our listening audience and sort of share some information about the Solar for All program? And we're going to have Frank to join us in here and talk about how he and what this means to him as a D.C. homeowner who has successfully completed that process.
So, my name is Stephanie Rivera, and I'm the D.C. Program Director for Solar United Neighbors. We're a nonprofit organization here in D.C., and for the last year and a half, we've been working as one of the grantees for the Solar for All initiative from the district. And the purpose of the Solar for All program is to help at least 100,000 low-income families go solar at no cost to them through the year 2032. And we're one of the first-round grantees. So the way we set up our program was focused on ownership. So our Solar for All participants are single-family homeowners, and they're low-income or low- to moderate-income families. And if they qualify for the program, like I said, they get a free solar system at no cost to them. It's going to cut their bill in half. And the way we cover the system is through the grant in the first 5 years of the solar renewable energy credits. But after year six, those credits go back to the homeowner, and they're free to sell them however way they want to and take that income for themselves, along with the savings on their utility bills.
Well, Yasina, I want to weigh in on this part of the conversation, and I want to let our listening audience know that families with incomes up to 80% of the area median income, which is referred to as the AMI, will qualify for the program if a household of eight makes under $102,250, a household of seven, $96,050, a household of six, $89,850, a household of five, $83,650, a household of four, $77,450, a household of three, $69,750, household of two, $62,000, and a household of one, $54,250. I just wanted our listening audience to be aware.
The income limits have gone up.
Oh, that's even greater news.
Yes. So for a family of four, the income limit would be $93,750. So, and for a family of just one, it would be $65,650.
Okay, because
so
I'm
going up quite a bit.
Yeah, because I'm just basically providing the last updates that of information that I had. So I'm glad to hear that. I want to bring Mr. Coles in because he has completely successfully completed the process with working with your organization, Justina. And I know I sent you the questions that I was going to provide for Mr. Coles. Well, Frank, why don't you come in and let people know who you are and a little bit of in terms of how you went through the process and the things and the benefits that you see from the program, and how would you sort of grade the whole information process, which was provided by Neighborhoods United?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I am a former operations manager for a major electronic toll transaction operation. And out of California and here in D.C., well, throughout the United States, actually. And we were introduced to Solar for Now. Ron came by. He's a friend, good friend of mine, and shared some information that he had collected over his research regarding solar energy. And we, of course, are looking to reduce our carbon footprint here in the district. And, of course, everything is going up, up, up. The expenses are going up, power's going up, you know, everything is going up, phone bills, everything is increasing. So as a result of doing some research on the system on solar energy and having an affinity for reducing, again, our economic impact or reducing our costs, we looked into solar power for now. And so as a result of that, we reduced our bill, as Ms. Riviera says, 50% plus, which excites me quite a bit because I know I had energy bills with the electric company in excess of $500 a month. And I'm like, it's not for two of us in the house. We do take a shower on a regular basis. We do eat on a regular basis. And we do live very moderately, but it's two seniors. And with a $500 electric bill, it's like, you know, what was that all about? So that's what gave us the impetus to look into solar, is to reduce our cost and energy costs, and in fact, it has. So we're very pleased at the results that we're receiving right now as a result of the installation of solar panels on our system, and we're looking to expand our knowledge in the use of solar energy and the other elements of energy that we can do that we can use to reduce our costs and our economic footprint in the district.
Well, Frank, I know I recently visited you and your lovely wife there in Ms. Settles, and y'all were discussing because I brought the issue up. Had you received your first electric bill since you've installed the system, and what was the actual dollar amount of the first utility bill after you the PV system has been installed?
It was under $100.
Now that is a tremendous. I hope our listening audience are hearing this. That is a tremendous savings for someone who is in the same boat that I am in when we are baby boomers, and a lot of our folks who are retirees who are African American in the district, they definitely need to look into this issue. Now, you see, I want you to sort of weigh in on this conversation because you recently did an excellent job in getting some information out concerning the time limits on that are running forth in terms of the tax investment credit, which is 30%, and at the end of the year it starts to depreciate. But you also talked about the fact that a lot of the installers are booking work up, and people need to hurry up, and if they're going to participate in your program, they need to be calling you up. So I want to get your contact information out, and I want you to go in and elaborate on that aspect of where things are right now with the 51st Cooperative here in D.C. that your organization does an excellent job running.
Sure. As you mentioned, the tax credit, the incentive for homeowners to go solar, the federal tax credit, that is set to go down at the end of the year. So that means that if you want to take advantage of the full 30% federal tax credit, you have to have your system installed before the end of the year. Now, we know that DCRA has been a little short in personnel at their solar desk, and the permitting is taking a while. So a lot of the installers, they set up a deadline of June, July to sign all those contracts and push the paperwork through DCRA in order for them to install the systems before the end of the year. So, and I know from my talk with the installers around the industry is that a lot of them are booking up pretty fast. People want to take advantage of the full 30% tax credit. And like I said, they have until the end of the year to install their systems. So that means that you have to have a signed contract by the summer in order to achieve that with the permitting waits that we're seeing right now in the city.
Well, you also have a litany of other issues surrounding the installs, because I know with the tariffs that 45, Lord have mercy, I hate to mention his name because he's subject to go off like a pistol with the safety nylon on the trigger, but he put some tariffs on China. So has that sort of also slowed the process down for getting the installs done? I'm going to direct that that question to both of you and Mr. Coles, because he went through this process. So I'd like for you to see, sort of weigh in and talk about how these tariffs have impacted this program for our residents here in the District of Columbia, because I know y'all have been working tirelessly administering this program.
Yes. Well, the first set of tariffs on solar panels itself didn't really affect the program as much. The increase was minimum in terms of the system cost. What did affect was the second tariffs on aluminum and steel, because there's a shortage now in terms of parapet racking. And the tariffs have affected the time that it took the installers to acquire new parapets, and that has delayed installations a lot. Mr. Cole can tell you their installation was also delayed because of the lack of parapet racking in the city. That's caused a backlog, not just for Solar for All, but for the market in general.
Yeah, well that's what I'm saying. Now, Frank, what type of experience did you have with Edge? I think it was Edge Solar. That is the name of the company that are doing the installs for you through your program, Edge Energy. What type of experience did you have with that particular company, Frank, and how would you grade them as an installation company?
Well, other than the delays in just getting the panels and the necessary connections, it was a very smooth process. Very smooth, I should say. We just had to delay because there were I guess challenges in getting the panels and whatever connecting pieces that they got from overseas. I guess from China. I don't know where it came from, but I'm assuming it came from China. And there was just a delay in getting that equipment here. But as for Edge, they are very confident in terms of walking us through the process step by step. They were very advisory during our process. And, you know, it was just a slow process in terms of just getting the hardware installed. But after the hardware has been installed, the system has been working excellently, I should say. We have an app that I use. I go on and look at it on a daily basis. It tells me how much energy we're producing, how much energy we're using, and how much energy is going back to the power network, power grid. So it's you know, to answer your questions, it's been very, very helpful and very 21st century technology going on right now.
Now, Frank, you've shown me on your smartphone that you can actually monitor on a daily basis how much energy that system is generating and your usage and that type of thing. So you always can just go right to your phone and you can see how much energy that system is generating, and it shows you that whole piece. And you see, and I'd like for you to come on in and weigh in on this part of the conversation, because also I see that your organization, the 51st State Cooperative, is accepting signups now through May 31st. Now, you have done an excellent job, Yacina, with providing this newsletter in here, and you have provided the expected installation costs to rise as solar credits expires. So could you sort of weigh in on that, these two aspects of the conversation?
In terms of the solar credit?
In terms of the solar credits, in terms of how, I know it's 30% right now, and it depreciates down to 26%, but in terms of how long does an individual who would actually be successful, as Mr. Coles was, in terms of applying for the program, and they own their system from day one, based on how your model is set up, but that they don't have to use the full 30% over the first year on their taxes. Can't they carry that over for several years, or how does that work?
Yes. So, like we always said, it's good to sit down with your tax advisor, and because we are not tax advisors, so this is just general information. If you have more detailed questions, please sit down with a tax expert and discuss it with him. But
excuse me, I just want to put a disclaimer in there. I hope our listening audience did hear that we're not CPAs on this show, and you still need to go see your tax person if you don't do your own taxes. Thank you very much. Go right ahead.
Exactly. So the idea is that, like you said, this tax credit is currently 30%. But next year, it's only going to be 26%, and the year after that, it's going to be 22%, and after that, there is no more tax credit for homeowners. So, for example, if the system cost was around $20,000 this year, and you install your system before the end of the year, you're looking at almost $5,000, $6,000 in a tax break. If you wait till next year to install your system, and it's the same cost, $20,000, you're looking at closer to $5,000. So you're going to lose some of that tax break. And obviously, if you wait till 2021, you're looking at $4,000 in tax break instead. So if you want to take full advantage of that 30%, then you have to go solar this year. That doesn't mean that the tax credit is going to expire at the end of the year. It's just going to be, it's going to be rolled down. Next year and the year after that, then it expires after 2021. But in terms of using the tax credit all at once, like you said, you can actually roll it over because it's not a refundable tax credit. So if you don't owe the federal government money, you don't get the full tax credit. You don't get a refund check. But let's say you do owe some money and it's less than what your tax credit is, you can use part of that tax credit this year in your taxes, and then next year when you file those taxes, you can take up the rest. So you can split it up and not just use it in one year if you don't own the full.
So people, yes, so people are able to take advantage of that option. And now, looking at where the program is right now, I know that I had Ted Tarbo, the director of DCSEU, on this show, and he talked about the fact that there, from the Solar for All program, the way the grant was written, that they could use at least about $1,500 for rooftop repair if a person was applying for the program and they had gone on and done the due diligence. But could you explain the process of what actually happens when a homeowner applies with DCSEU, because I know that the tax credits for the first 5 years, that goes back to DCSEU. And could you explain to our listening audience what that pays for? Because I know that there's warranties and there are other things associated with the installation of the system in terms of maintenance and maintaining that. I spoke with Mr. White down at DCSEU on Friday because I was trying to get up to speed, because I heard the gentleman from Edge making a presentation to some relatives of mine in Southeast Washington, D.C. that have applied for the program and are qualified, and they came back with their initial proposal and with the design layout for that, and he seemed not to be very, very thoroughly knowledgeable of that aspect. He just said that it goes back to DOEE. So could you sort of elaborate on that aspect, because I know that will bring some clarity for Mr. Coles and in our listening audience.
So the way we develop our program, our grant, like I said, we are paying for the system two ways. So the bulk of the system is being paid by the grant through Solar for All, but that doesn't cover the full cost of the system. So we really didn't want people to have to come out of pocket for these systems to keep through with the program. So what we did is that we're selling the first 5 years of the solar renewable energy credits as part of the process, and that covers what the grant doesn't cover. And that way they don't have to come out of pocket at all. They have that option. So with selling the SRECs, which go, they're sold through DCSEU, we partner with them to offset the costs of the SRECs and help the homeowners and try to make the process as smooth as possible. So the first 5 years or so, they are handover to DCSEU, and DCSEU covers with that money what the grant doesn't cover. That way the homeowners are not coming out of pocket at all. But after year six, those SRECs go back to the homeowner, and it's theirs to do, like I said, whatever they want to do with them. If they want to sell them all up front, what's left, they can do that. If they want to sell them on the spot while they're generated, they can do that as well. It depends on how much appetite they have for risk, because this is a market. Those prices go up and down. So if you take a larger risk, you'll get a larger investment, but you can also get a lower payout. So it depends on the homeowners and what their appetite is. If you sell them all up front, you'll get a lower number, but you're taking less of a risk.
Well,
does that explain?
I know that. I know that with the passing of the 100% Omnibus Act of 2018, which Mayor Bowles signed into law on January the 18th, 2019, there has been a sizable upsurge in the value of the credits. So could you share with listening audience what these extracts are going for in the marketplace as we speak now? Because as you say, they do go up and down, but I do know that they have experienced a sizable increase since they moved to a 100% renewable portfolio standard law in the district. And also I want our people to understand another reason why they need to be signing up and taking advantage of these programs is that this program is really not free. When you pay your gas, water, and electric bills in the D.C., there are compliance fees that are being passed on by way of the shortfall of D.C.-based solar in the District of Columbia, because by law, your utility provider, Pepco, must buy these credits from their customer base. And because we don't have enough homeowners, businesses in the district with the PV systems on their roofs, there's a what they call a shortfall of DC-based infrastructure in the DC. So could you sort of explain to folks how this thing is playing out in terms when they get there? I think it's called the clean water fee on their water bill and the gas bill. There are also these credits are attached to, and all of this is going into funding the set fees for this green bank, which is going to be capitalized at $256.6 million, which will be collected over the next 10 years. So it only makes sense for our listening audience here in the D.C. residents, homeowners to take advantage of this as well as renters, because you do have a community solar program, and I'd like for you to sort of weigh in that. And Brother Coles, I want you to sort of weigh in on how you have been trying to spread the word and get the word out to your neighbors and friends about this program.
So in terms of the solar renewable energy credits, as you mentioned, the utility providers, because of the renewable portfolio standard, have to show that a certain amount of energy that is used in the district comes from solar sources. Now, before the clean energy bill, that was capped at 5%. And towards the end of last year, we saw the value of the SRECs go down, especially between the summer and the fall. Now, once the council passed the 100% clean energy bill, they increased the solar carve-out from 5 to 10% by 2032. That has created an even bigger need for the utility companies to show there's more solar energy being used inside the district. Now, none of the utility companies have solar farms inside of the city, so they have an option. They either buy the solar renewable energy credits from solar homeowners and businesses inside the district, or they pay the district a fine. That fine right now, it's $500 per megawatt that they fall short. So they rather buy these credits at a lower amount than that than pay the fine. And that's where the market is created. Now, towards the end of last year, the solar renewable energy credits were about $250, $300. They have gone up since the 100% Clean Energy Act, and they're around $350, $400 per credit. And on average, a solar farm.
Whoa, I don't want to stop the system, but that's a tremendous jump in value for someone that has a system on their roof. And the other point that I want to make, based on the former testimony of Mrs. Betty Ann Kane, who was head of the Public Service Commission here in Washington, D.C., which is appointed by Congress. They've been there since 1913 downtown. They're supposed to look after you as ratepayers' interest on your communications, gas, electric, and now they have water under their auspices. But she stated in her testimony in 2016, the shortfall represented $15 million. And that was year for 2016. In 2017, that number jumped up to $26.6 million, which Pepco had to pay out to the city because of the shortfall. And with this, it was a 5% carve-out. With this increase to 10%, we could all you could almost sort of double that figure, wouldn't you say so, Yesenia?
Yes. So, but remember, that carve-out is going to be increasing slowly. It didn't go overnight from 5 to 10. So it just increases a certain amount every year until 2032. So by 2032, it will be 10%. We are hoping that with the technology and the available programs, that we'll be close to meeting that 10% just in homeowners.
Okay. Now, Brother Coles, I want you to come back in and weigh in on this conversation. Now, what would you recommend in terms of the process to our listening audience, Frank, in terms of how long it took you to completely get through the complete process with the applications with you and Trudy working on this thing?
It was roughly 365 days.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, I hope our listening audience heard what Mr. Coles has indicated. This is not a this is not something you're going to do in one day or one week or a month. It's a process. So, Yusina, could you please give people your information, the call-in number? Help, because I think we got a major fire in D.C. because everything's on fire because these utilities, everybody got to pay the utility bills. Could you please and would you please talk about the community solar program, subscription programs that are going on in the district, because our community, the African American community, has no clue of what to do.
So in terms of contacting us, I want to make clear, right now we are putting anybody that contacts us about Solar for All in a wait list. And the reason we're doing this is because under our current grant restrictions, we have to have the systems up and operating by September. We've asked DOE for an extension on our performance period, so we're waiting to hear back. Until we hear back from them, we're putting everybody on a wait list that's joining recently so that we know whether or not we can help them in as soon as DOE responds to our extension request. But they can contact us at our office. The phone number is 202-888-3601. Again, that phone number in the office is 202-888-3601. Now, the community solar program, most of the grantees that are working under Solar for All are actually doing community solar. And what that means is that they're not installing the system in your roof. They're installing these systems at parking lots, churches, schools. They're installing large systems. And as a community solar, you would subscribe to that system. So you get a credit on your bill that covers, if you're Solar for All, it would cover half of the bill. If you are a market participant and you don't qualify for Solar for All, you can buy a subscription into this system. If you're a Solar for All participant, the subscription is free at cost to you. So, and like I said, there are several grantees that are doing the Solar for All, the community solar version of Solar for All. And if you're a tenant, if you live in an apartment complex, you don't own the house, you can go solar through them and still get the cut in your utility bills. If for some reason your house isn't good enough for solar, even though you're a solar homeowner, if you're a homeowner, but let's say you have roof problems or you live in a historic district or you simply live in an area that's too shaded for solar, you can also go the community solar route. Okay. And we actually have a web page that has the community solar programs here in D.C. And I can't remember.
Could you please give out that web address?
Yeah, I'm trying to find the link because I do not remember it off the top of my head. But if you go to our website, solarunitedneighbors.org, you can look for community solar. And we have a platform there that shows what are the community solar programs available to D.C. residents. Like I said, we also refer people out, too. So if you call and you have a question, you can call our office, again, 202-888-3601. And if it's a community solar question, we'll be happy to send you to the platform or to one of the Solar for All grantees.
Well, I want our listening audience to know that this information that Mr. Coles and Mrs. Yusina Riviera, who's the director, program director at Solar United Neighbors D.C. here, is invaluable, and that you need to be calling your city council folk, asking them to put more funding in the budgets that are coming up for this solar for all, because if they're trying to help 100,000 people, I recently saw a press piece that came out with the mayor celebrating the 100th install, and I would assume that would be with considering all the different grantees with the model. I think they've done about 100 homes with this recent grant that they have out here, but this program needs to be put on steroids and blown up, because people are hurting out here. Everybody got to pay the gas, water, and electric bills. There's no way around that. And one of the things for sure, here we go with 45 again. That with 45 subjects to go off at any minute on Twitter, but he can't figure out a way not to understand that once you put these tariffs, and this creates a issue of the people who do the work, who are the installers, if they can't get the frames of the framing, which is made out of aluminum from China, then that backs things up. Then you see how it has affected this program, because they need an extension in order to be able to get the work done in the grant time, but because they did not have the frames and all of the solar panels, they couldn't get the work done. So now you got to go back to the schedule, because everything's on a timeline. Because time is money. And speaking of time is money, I know y'all got to go and do something else. But I want to thank y'all very, very, very much for taking time from both of your very, very, very busy schedule to join me on this platform, Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. And in closing, Mr. Coles, is there anything you'd like to say to the listening audience, as well as you, Yesenia, because I've already ran over. I've kept you longer than I asked you to come on, but I always do that. Because I'm trying to get as much of this information out as I can.
Just a quick closing. I'm looking at my dashboard, and the solar is producing 1.7 kilowatts. We're using 4.5 kilowatts. We're producing, and the solar is 4.1 kilowatts. So we are using 0.5 kilowatts from the grid.
Okay. Well, that's very important, because you just monitor every day.
Make me happy.
and that's why I wanted you and Mr. Coles on, because when you got people who that you know that are good people like Mr. Coles and his wife, and they've gone through this process and they got the physical results from the program on their rooftops, and it's helping them. And because we're talking about pocketbook issues now, this thing is serious, because a lot of folks who look like us, who are on fixed income or in their homes, they're 55 years and older, and these utility bills is no joke, especially when they suffer from the disease I suffer from. It's called they grown, but they ain't gone. That means they children who are adults who have moved back in with their kids and their grandkids, and you love them, you ain't going to put them out in the street. But guess what goes on when they move back in? Your utility bill goes up. Washing clothes, lights, electricity, cooking. This is real. This is something that everybody deals with on a day-to-day basis. So I want to thank both of you, and especially you, Cindy. You're the hardest working person in show business, because you got one title, but you got more in your job description than they're paying you for. So I want to put a shout out to the founder of the organization. Hey, you need to put a little more pep in her check. When you get it, you need a raise, sister. So I want to make sure everybody know it. You do a tremendous job and a tremendous service to our community here, the black community here in Washington, D.C., and what you do working with this organization. And I just want to thank both of you once again for taking time from your very busy schedule to join me on this platform, Solar Now and the Future, with its economic impact on Black America.
Thank you. Have a great day.
But before I leave you, I just wanted to point out a couple of things. Because I know you had asked me the number of systems so far. Up to date, we've had 100 participants become income qualified. Of those, 71 participants have actually signed a contract with Edge Energy to go solar, and almost half of them, well, more than half of them, have their permits approved, and half of them have actually had installations. On average, we're looking at a system size of 4.2 kilowatts. So that means savings of $500 to $600 a year at least. And SRACs are, like I said, they're theirs after year six. So between the savings and the SRACs, we're looking at $20,000 to $25,000 savings and income through the life of the system. So it's an amazing program. It really is. And if you're interested, like I said, we're waitlisting people right now because we're waiting on DOE for the program extension. And if we can't help you, we'll forward you to one of the other Solar for All grantees. There's a couple coming up online in the next few weeks. And if your roof isn't good enough or you're a tenant, we'll be happy to refer you to one of the community solar grantees. We just want to see people go solar in the district. That's our objective. And last but not least, we do have our Solar Congress coming up this year again. It's in a little over 3 weeks. It's going to be June 1st. At the Rice Demonstration Center, and the address is 2730 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue Southeast. It's going to be from 9:30 to 4. Again, that's Saturday, June 1st. So you want to learn more about Solar for All, you want to learn about solar in general, the state of solar in the district, this is the place to be.
Yeah, it's definitely a place to be. Well, you know, Yesenia, you can count me on as being one of the presenters because I did talk about equity at the University of the District of Columbia. But I'd like to come back on and talk about this issue about this community engagement because I think I do a halfway decent job with this show, and I really need to get this show onto the airways. And this is targeted down there to Tommy Wells and his crew down there at DOEE because I did apply for that community engagement grant, and they decided they wanted to go another direction. But I don't think that there's another format any place in the country that is bringing the information that these two outstanding individuals just provided to our community about pocketbook issues over the airways of Blog Talk Radio coming screaming over Facebook and Twitter. So people got to know I'm here in order to get this information. But there's a radio station here called the Flagship. It's called WOL 1450 AM, and I've already submitted everything down there to them. So that's left up on them if they want to really get this information out, because reaching 100,000 folks to help 50% of them reduce their energy costs by year 2032, that's no small undertaking. And if they're real and sincerely about pumping up this outstanding program, then I'm going to need some help on this end. And I want to thank both of you once again for joining me on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Yesenia. Thank you, Frank. And that was Mr. Frank Coles, who is a very, very close friend of mine, who has the ability to listen and to act on information. And that was Mrs. Yesenia Riviera, who is the Solar United Neighbors D.C. program coordinator that has been coming live to you over the airways of Blog Talk Radio through my show. Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. We're going to take a slight pause for the cause, and then we're going to come back in here, and we're going to switch gears, and we're going to talk about something called racism in the solar industry and in with a class action suit that's been filed by a law firm based in New York, and you're going to want to hear this information. So please don't go, as I said, don't.
Life is a song worth singing. I got you. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing. I got you. Sing it.
Welcome back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, that that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. And we are able to bring you this show every week because, you know, the slogan for this show is, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC captures that power for your financial benefit. And the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC is a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize Black-owned farmlands, HBCU campuses, to develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the unemployed young African-American men and women here in the DMV market area locally and nationally. Also, in educating the Black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the Black community through Black radio talk show programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. It's also brought to you by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF, HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, and we want to be able down the road to even get more into that, but we've been working on some things, folks. But well, it's also brought to you by Scotton Communications Network, specializing in the following areas: public relations, writing, editing, web development, web editing, magazine production, online and traditional, newspaper production, online and traditional, speech writing, book writing, editing and publishing, and speaker bureau management. And for contact information, you can contact Scotton Communications Network, all one word.com. That's Scotton Communications Network.com. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, that call-in number is 646 668 646-668-2948. Once again, our call-in number is 646-668-2948. Please remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. Now, as I indicated before we broke, we took the break, that I would be talking to you about this class action suit. It seems like a model green energy firm, but black workers painted a different picture. This is an article done by Patrick McGeehan, published May 6, 2019, in the New York Times newspaper. As you see, we do scour publications looking for information, because as the Dr. Kathy Hughes made it famous, information is power, especially when you take that information and you act on it through her flagship station, WOL 1450 AM here in Washington, D.C., and 95.9 FM on your dial. Now, the federal and district courts in Brooklyn were in the suit where the suit was filed. Credit Chang Lee, the New York Times, who also did a lovely photograph. People can get this and read this article by logging on to Positive Change. That's Positive Change, PC.com. That's Positive Change, P as in Paul, C as in cat.com. Clicking on our news and events tab, and you'll be able to stroll down and find this article. The company seemed like a model for the modern economy. It's grown so fast that the clean energy field that New Jersey awarded it a $7.2 million in tax incentives to keep adding jobs installing solar panels. But six black men who worked for the company, Momentum Solar, painted a far different picture. They contend that the managers often, and in its operation on Long Island, fostered a racially hostile work environment and fired employees who complained about it. The managers made frequent use of racial slurs, routinely called black men boy, and paid them less than their white workers. A lawsuit was filed Monday, alleged. The suit filed in the federal court in Brooklyn seeks a class action status on behalf of all employees who work out of the company's warehouse in Plainview, New York. It accused the company managers of engaging in systematic discrimination against black workers and retaliating against them who filed complaints. The six disgruntled former hourly employees were terminated for legitimate non-discriminatory reasons, including unacceptable workplace behavior, fighting, poor performance, failure to show up for work on violation, and material company policies and procedures. A statement from the outside lawyer for the company. That's what he said. The company intends to vigorously defend against all these claims. Momentum Solar, which is based in Manchester, New Jersey, claims to be one of the fastest growing companies in the industry with more than 1,200 employees across the country. Last year, it received a $7.2 million in tax incentives from New Jersey's Economic Authority for its plan to add more than 150 jobs over 3 years. The state's tax incentive program has come under scrutiny after recent revelations by the New York Times that tax breaks were awarded to politically connected companies, and Momentum was not one of the firms cited in the Times report. How politically connected companies are win lucrative tax credits And it breaks down the tax break of $260 million benefits to the states was tiny, or $155 million by all, as of May of 2019, but they gave up $260 million in tax breaks and only got a return of $155,520. Woo-wee, boy, I'm telling you, if you got the money and you hooked up and you connected, you know, as they say, if you can pay the cost to be the boss, I mean, I guess if you want, if you can be, you can play that game, that's why they're playing it. Nearly $300 million in tax breaks awarded to four companies with close Democrat ties. So this is on both sides of the aisle, y'all. This ain't just like the boys with the elephant. The donkey getting some too. I wish they sent some this way. Yeah, that, but it don't seem to me that anything's coming our way. With Momentum's investors and clients and taxpayers who helped put the bill for the operation do not know it, what they do not know is that the management at the company's New York-based warehouse fosters a work environment permitted on vile racism, the complaint stated. The former employees who were represented by Michael J. Willenman of the Wildor Law Firm in Manhattan, one of the former Momentum's workers, Mr. Shaden Beswick, said in an interview that he was subject to frequent use of the N-word and called a boy as he lugged 50-pound solar panels up a 40-foot ladder to the roof to a two-story townhouses. It was just random racism, said Mr. Beswick, who is an electrician. He said he put up with it for a while because he had a baby daughter and bills to pay. But when he noticed that white workers were getting better assignments while he was consistently giving grunt work, he complained to his manager. The manager dismissed the complaints, telling him that there were always three sides to the story. Your side, his side, and the truth. Mr. Beswick recalled, a day after logging one of these complaints, he said he was fired and told, it's just not going to work out. Kevin Brown, one of the plaintiffs, said that he started at $15 an hour and never received a raise in 5 months at Momentum. One day, a new white employee with no experience in solar told Mr. Brown he was receiving $22 an hour. Mr. Brown said eventually he told the foreman that he was tired of being called a boy at work. He was abruptly shifted from that crew and within weeks was fired. He said his replacement, the inexperienced white worker, was earning $7 an hour more, he said. Another plaintiff, Granite Morrell, said he left the job with Tesla and took a pay cut to join Momentum, believing he would receive a raise after I showed him how I worked. Mr. Morrell was promoted to a foreman position overseeing the all-black crew of installers, but he was shamelessly paid less than white counterparts, according to the complaint. Well, black folks, this is not a new phenomenon to me. When I reached out to Abigail Harper, head of the Solar Industry Trade Association, about some of these same issues, and asked her or someone from the Solar Industry Trade Association to come on this show, it had been met with silence, nothingness. No one is willing to come on my show. Matter of fact, I got a email back from the Solar Industry Trade Association saying to me that the industry always hires the best qualified applicants. According to this, that's BS. Now, I'm going to go into another article which reinforces what I am saying here, because, see, we don't have to walk it. As they say, we can talk it, but everybody got their opinion, but we have researched articles by investigative reporters to back this up. Now, this is an article which is coming up, if you will bear with me and give my slow computer a chance to load, we're going to dive right into this, because this is backs up the other article I just read to you, folks. Solar groups call for more inclusive hiring methods to improve diversity, which is, I'm going to make it plain, which is a bunch of bullshit. We're going to make it show. BS. The author who did this article is Andy, last name is spelled BALASKOVITZ, Balaskowitz, which was published May 6, 2019, Energy News Network. Solar work diversity is it's a picture of a gentleman on the top of a roof. A worker installed solar panels on a barn roof. A national survey of 800 solar employers and workers released Monday shows that the industry needs to adopt a more inclusive recruiting practices in order to improve diversity in the workforce. This is a bunch of BS, and I'm going to call it what it is. A new report shows that solar workforce is mostly white and male, and that changes are needed to close the gap about diversity. I'm not saying that it's BS what's in the article. I'm talking about the industry and the people who are running the industry actually trying to do anything to really get high black folks in this industry. And I'll stand by that statement. Now, the solar industry needs to adopt more inclusive recruiting practices in order to improve the diversity of its largely white and male workforce, according to a report released Monday by two leading industry groups. The 2019 U.S. Solar Industry Diversity Study is based on a national survey of nearly 800 solar employers and workers by a nonprofit solar foundation that gets your funding, who I've asked to come on my show, and they refuse to do so, and the Solar Industry Association, who I've asked to come on this show, and they refuse to do so. Now, the report shows little change from a 2017 edition. The percentage of women and non-white workers is comparably slightly better than the energy, construction, and manufacturing fields, but worse than the U.S. workforce overall, among reports finding. Women, 26%. And I think that this issue was screwed, because African Americans, we are both genders, male and female. And African Americans, 8%, are the most underrepresented compared to the overall U.S. workforce. White men significantly overrepresent the executive positions that are 88% of senior executives are white, are all men. Women make up 74% of the dollars, make 74% of a dollar to men, reflecting a similar gender pay gap nationally. And that's what this is about, to show the disparity between the income, being money being made between white women and white men. That's what I, this is how I'm looking at this thing. Point blank, period. Because I spoke to Abigail Harper back in February at the American Association of Blacks and Energy public energy public policy summit here, and asked her about some of these issues, and they would get back to me. I contacted them. I ain't heard nothing from nobody. So I'm letting you know that these folks who are running this trade association, the Solar Foundation, or these folks, they are not serious when you tell me, oh, we signed the collaboration, an agreement with a collaboration that yours truly helped bring to it in existence, which is the HBCU collaboration, which is 21 HBCUs, but I am the one who initiated sending information to the United Negro College Fund and to Leslie Basterville, who heads the National Association for Equal Opportunity in Higher Education. They came together. Because they formed the collaboration don't mean a damn thing if our young people ain't getting no jobs, which they are not. Now, this is their excuse, folks. We went on to look at the burgeoning industry may be in a unique position to tackle the problem, said the Solar Foundation president and executive director, Andrea L-U-E-C-K-U, Andrew Luckett. I've asked her to be on these airways. She's declined. She has the right to do so. The distributed nature of the technology means it can be built in all types of communities while involving dozens of different solar occupations, many of which don't require higher education. This is a technology that is potentially to reach into a variety of communities and potentially to improve the livelihoods of people nationwide, Lucky said. Yeah, okay, she's good at giving soundbites to white publications. Read more. Can legislation help diversity in the solar workforce in Illinois? So hope so. Okay, fine. Recruiting and tracking. The most common recruitment methods by may contribute to the industry lack of diversity. I don't think so. Solar companies report often relying on professionals or personal networks in the study notes, which can lead these companies to overlook candidates from diverse backgrounds or not spend any time to cast a wider net. People of color, which are much less likely to find their positions through employee referrals or word of mouth. Oh, they're not? Well, I agree with that point, because if you're not talking to black folks through platforms like this, Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on black America, how in the world are they supposed to know about it, these positions? Solar Foundation project manager Mary Von Laverne said solar is a fairly new industry with a large number of startups like lead companies to hire those they know. That's bullshit. Solar is not new. Solar's been around 43 years. Barack Hussein Obama, who, in fact, in 2008, after Van Jones had the Green Act job codified under George Walker Bush, resulted in $500 million in workforce development, and the Sunshine Identity Initiative, which was launched by President Obama after black folks in untold numbers went to the polls and voted him into office 2 years. Now, he did something good, but he did a piss poor job with his enforcement through his Office of Diversity and Inclusion at the Department of Energy. Jane Compos, who presently holds that position, I spoke to him in February at the AID, the American Association of Blacks in Energy Public Policy Summit. On this show, I had Tracy Woods, their operational manager, to come on this show. We talked about that upcoming summit and how important it was because they had a fly-in date, which was February the 26th and February 27, 28. They had the public policy summit at the National Press Building here in Washington, D.C., which yours truly attended. And I spoke to James Campos about coming on my show and talking about what is going on at the Department of Energy and concerning of the Office of Diversity and Inclusion. And I told him, you come to these policy summits every year A puts on, and y'all talk about what you're going to do to reach out to the African-American community and to work with our HBCUs. And this collaboration which is headed by a gentleman out of Miami, and yours truly, who went to the head of the UNCF here in Washington, D.C., and I have all this, the letters and documentation to back up what I'm saying, so I'm going to say what I got to say, because I paid away on this show. Now, we talked about this issue. And I said to them at the policy summit, look, you're talking about reaching out to the HBCUs, but you got Howard University sitting here, the University of the District of Columbia sitting here, Coffin University, Morgan State University, my alma mater, and Bowie State University right here in the DMV market area. There's no excuse with all African-American students going to University of Maryland, Georgetown, GW, that y'all can't get African-American students here at this public policy summit. So a whole lot of folks didn't like it, y'all. I don't care if they don't like it, but I'm tired of people coming into public forums talking to just those black folks who my age, say I'm 68 years old, ain't nothing they can do to me. Because I ain't got to do nothing. I'm going to stay black. And I'm gonna die, and we got some insurance, so they can jippy pop me, or they can drop me in a hole, and we can keep stepping. But I'm gonna speak truth to power on this format. Now, this is what these folks are saying. When I reached out to Mr. Campos, James Campos, who is Hispanic of origin, and then you got a sister who is his administrative assistant, who I sent the emails to both of them, and she told me he was on travel, and then she came back and referred me back to their communications office. Matter of fact, she got angry with me at the event, and I thought she was pulling guard for the Redskins, because I went and used the men's room after Mr. Campos, who spoke, and I made my public comments in front of everybody in the room. That's how I am. I went out to the men's room. I'm coming back. He had come out. His panel was off. They were in the hallway. People were lining up to speak to them. So I got near him to give him my card to speak to him directly. And the African-American sister got between me and him and said, oh, give me your card, I'll give it to him, just like I couldn't hand it to him myself, as though I didn't have enough common sense to understand what she was doing. Black folks, we need to stop this gatekeeping BS, because I got a government job, especially our black women, because y'all are the ones who playing, they using you to play this game. This game shouldn't be played in 2019. Black folks have died in the streets, and I come out of the civil rights area because I am from South Carolina, so I was a part of the movement, so I paid my dues. Now, when we begin to look at the solar farm, trying to find positions very quickly. It is easy to fill positions very quickly. It's just easy to hire friends or the first people who knock on your door and to cast, rather than to cast a wider net. Luke said, it's not that the industry is lazy, that it's that they're already operating a razor thin margins. It's one of those things no one wants to deal with it and has been dealt with a meaningful way until now. I don't know what they mean by now, because I met Chet Love in Baltimore, and I know who he is. I know his background. He's African-American, but he's sort of like a gatekeeper. I've asked him to come on my show. They decided to deal with him rather than me, okay? Because folks are getting paid to do what I'm providing for you free over these airways. The industry is hiring practice, particularly impacts women of color. It's not just women of color. Black men aren't getting jobs either, who reported to perceive a need to provide more evidence of their competency compared to their peers and not having the right connections. For women of color in the solar, it's important activities that have helped them advance their careers include their professional networks and female mentorships that have helped them move up the ladder, the report said. This is bullshit. What about black men who graduate from these schools with these engineering degrees? Saturday, Howard University's graduation, you have a whole black, a slew of African-American men walk across this stage who will get these degrees and won't be able to get a job in this industry. The Solar Foundation plans to partner with the historic black colleges and universities to create a database of interested students and alumni to form a sort of employee pipeline. That's bullshit. Because the HBCU Coalition and collaboration, I'm asking, what are you doing? I've had them on my show. Ms. Keisha Jackson. So it's like, y'all can't play this game with me because I already know who all the players are. Okay? On this one. Now, people need to be calling specifically the Congressional Black Caucus about this and raising pure hell with the CBC office about this. Now, the young lady I was talking to at the Office of Economic Impact and Diversity was Ms. Kelly Mitchell, who decided she would be the gatekeeper for Mr. James Compost. She's assistant advisor of this department. She's African American, but she does a job looking out for herself. But in terms of actually getting something done, well, I'd like to know what they're getting done, because they can definitely come on this show, and I'm giving them an open opportunity to talk about what they're actually getting done. Now, when we're looking at, since recruiting within the networks is going to end up anytime soon, L. Lukey said companies can incentivize employees hiring others from more diverse backgrounds. Sunfolding, a San Francisco-based manufacturing tracking employment, gives employees a referral bonus for recommending their hires who identify women, the LGBTQ. I don't knock people for their personal self-preference, but I get a little tired of that bullshit, because black folks, African Americans in this country who built this damn country, we've been marginalized with gender, the issue, and with this LBG issue when it comes to jobs and employment and contracts. Because white women are considered a minority under minority contracting law in the U.S. I mean, I'm not making this up, folks. And what folks need to understand is certain things you accept and certain things you don't accept. Well, to me, if I'm giving you an opportunity to come on and talk about these issues, and you feel as though I'm beneath you or you above me, well, let's talk about it. Let's chop it up. Because I think I can go toe-to-toe about this information. Now, Bobby, I'm going to think of the Congress. He's from Chicago. He's a congressman. And he, in fact, spoke at the Public Policy Summit here in Washington, D.C., that was just recently held by the American Association of Blacks and Energy about these whole issues. And it seems to me that people can't keep making excuses and just and then our folks allow them to get away with it, other than folks feel comfortable because they can get funding to do what they need to do, and as long as I can pay my bills, well, hell with you. Because that's how I'm beginning to sort of feel. That's what's going on with my platform here. Because like I said, believe me, if I hadn't reached out time and time again and been shown really what they think of me, I wouldn't be telling you what I think of them. So, like I said, I don't believe that these folks are serious about providing jobs and opportunities for our folks in this solar and renewable energy industry. And everybody is beating the drum because a lot of your public dollars are being used to pay for this infrastructure movement and for this energy piece. You have right now SEIA announced formally a commitment to diversity and inclusion and has created the best practices for companies. You see, this is how this stuff gets boiled out. I felt that, and this was Mrs. Abigail Hopper, I felt it was important to make this a public issue, to challenge others to stand up and account for the work they're doing. SEIA President Mrs. Abigail Hopper said in her statement, "As a leader, we have the responsibility to create cultural change and address the systemic forces that have allowed discrimination to foster." Also last year, the National Sunday Run announced reach out, pay parity across employees. That's for white women. That's for white women, because there ain't that many sisters got jobs in this industry. Fair and equal for gender and race is for fundamental human rights, and intern for Sunrun CEO Lynn Hertz said at that time, "The United States today's workforce equality that exists is unacceptable. And on average, women are paid 80%. And it goes right back into talking about white women making less money than white men. That's how I'm looking at this, folks. And I'm making it plain on this show. And we're not going to sugarcoat this thing. All right? Because when you begin to deal with these issues, you get the same stuff time and time again. Now, I just gave you two examples from two articles, and I can back this up because people can go to our website and you can read this information for yourself. You can go to my website and you can get this information. I have a caller on the line.
Man, you putting out some
Hello,
information
caller.
There.
Oh, yeah, I put out the information. I put it out every week. And
you know,
people don't listen. People aren't listening.
You know, I was in the structural steel erection business. I put up buildings. I had a company that erected buildings like the ones that fell in New York during 9/11. And I was in that industry since I was 19. And you're absolutely right. Those problems do exist where you have black tradespeople that are not being hired unless you put a lot of pressure on them. But one way to overcome that, one way to overcome that is that you got to have more black contractors. You got to have the politics for, and another reason, And, you know, look at Chicago, where they created these black trade unions, which are doing pretty well. Now, another thing
well,
in the
Bobby
solar
Rush
industry.
Well, Bobby Rush is out of Chicago, brother. He has environment. Okay? And I spoke
well,
to him
some
on February
20th. There's some Nigerians.
Excuse me?
There's some Nigerians in Chicago that started their own contracting business, and they're doing pretty good. But I'm not here to argue. I'm here to tell you what I done. And I retired. You know, I erect the structure still for a long time. And about 85% of my workforce was white that I came up through the industry with. And that's just because that's what the makeup of the industry. I hired iron workers. That's what the industry looked like. But let me say this. You know, in the solar business, you have a pretty nice contractor that's in that business, and his name is 510 Nano. Have you ever heard of that before? His name is Reginald Parker.
Gentlemen, you got 30 African American solar in development companies out of 9,920 doing business in the U.S. The positive change purchasing cooperative is in connection with all of them trying to increase market share for them. That's what we do. We started this format as a way to get information out to people about those companies, but they can't even come together. And I'm right here in the DMV area. It's like herding cats.
Well, I understand,
it's
but
like
I'm just going to tell
cats.
You one that I know that's even doing business over doing installations overseas and also out
you
of
know,
North
I,
Carolina.
Yes, sir.
But it's,
yes, sir.
But
I'm
it's,
familiar.
But his name
I'm
is,
very familiar.
His you name is Reginald Parker. I've talked to him,
yeah.
And his company is called 510 Nano Incorporated. So, you know, that's about all I can tell you. On that. Yeah,
well, brother,
it is
let
a
me
problem.
Do this.
Mm-hmm.
Let me do this because my show getting ready to end, and I want you to come back on this show. You can shoot me an email at info@positivechangepc.com, and I can have you on because I do an hour and a half, and you just came in here. We had less than like 4 or 5 minutes left before I go off the air because this is an hour and a half show.
Well, I was hanging on for a while. You was on a roll, but that's okay.
You know,
info at positivechangepc.com.
PC.com. You have info@positivechangepc. P is in Paul, C is in cat.com. But if you can send me an email, I would glad to have you come on and talk about your experiences and things that you saw in that construction industry because all this stuff ties in. It's interrelated. And I
want
to thank you for.
Yeah, they don't want you to compete. I mean. But we're
Bro,
talking about
I don't care enough about what they don't want. They didn't want us to compete on the football fields. That's why we had a segregation in this country. And you had an all-white Negro. We had the Negro baseball leagues. We had the Negro NFLs. They never wanted us to compete.
Absolutely. And then when you do get in there, you begin to dominate. And that's if you was in Nigeria, you had the same problem, believe me. But anyway, we're talking
white folks didn't just take chains off black folks' feet and put it on their brain in the United States. They've gone all over the world with that brainwashing.
What I'm saying is that once you have a clique, that clique exists. No, if it was in Eskimo land, it just exists. So the best way to overcome that is to compete against it. There's a pie that's already established and that has already been subdivided. And if you want
to
share
this with your brother, because I'm getting ready to go off the air because my show's going to end on us. The only folks going to save us is us. Black folk got enough stuff that we can do and create our own infrastructure in this thing. I strongly suggest that you go to our website, positivechangepc.com, click on About Us, and then look at our news and events links, and you'll see we've got over 1,000 articles that we have in a database we put together for our young millennials and our college people because this show is, I'm trying to get it now syndicated over Kathy Hughes' network, and I've tried to get it tied into our HBCU campuses. That's who need to hear this program, our young folks, because they can
And also
raise
organization like the National Society of Black Engineers, too. You mentioned that other black engineering company. My grandson won a scholarship. But look, go ahead and end your show, man. We'll talk later. You can call this number back if you want to. I'll be here for a little bit.
Okay. Well, let me make sure I write you down, bro, before I get off this number. And we can have a discussion off the air, because like I said, I understand, but I also understand when you get to go in these organizations and you get to talking about who runs America, because when you're talking about energy companies, that's who really runs the country with the banks. So we can both agree on a lot of things. And like everybody says, everybody got their opinion, but everybody ain't got the facts. But I do know who runs America, and it ain't 45 down there tweeting. These oil companies, gasoline companies, it's the energy industry. That's who runs the country, period. End of conversation. So, brother, thank you very much for joining us today. I hope all of you, those who are listening, and as you heard, a caller did call in, and we are getting some traction with this show. But I want people to know, the way I provide it is uncut and unfiltered, and I'm going to call a spade on this show, and it is what it is. So I hope we brought to you news that you can definitely use here on this episode of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Until next week, go in peace.
Is a song worth singing. I do too. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Singing.